Hey everybody, it's Justin. Good morning. Welcome to the first full episode of the Mayday Podcast Testaments Book Club. Hope you're going to enjoy. If you are just getting to this episode, know that there is an introductory episode where we meet all the people who are going to be participating in the book club podcasts and have them kind of go through and introduce themselves, as well as the first part of it is spent getting into the three characters of the book. So if you're just finding this, know that there is one before this in case you want to get some introductory information, because there's not much on this one. We dive straight into the book. So you can find that on the previous episode. Just released it yesterday, so not too far to go. Thank you everyone for listening. Hope you enjoy. There's going to be four of these. We'll be covering about 100 pages of the book per episode, and we'll have these about every week or so through probably the end of October. So look for that and enjoy the podcast. And don't forget, Handmade Halloween is coming.
Is this it? Mayday. Is it? Yes.
So, we're going to start talking about what we've read so far through chapter 6, character by character. And I think we would all agree that we'd like to start with Lydia.
Yes.
Yeah. The book starts with Lydia, too.
Yes. So. It's appropriate. Oh, it's not just because we like her.
I love the first two lines. Only dead people are allowed to have statues, but I have been given one while still alive. Already, I am petrified. Mm-hmm. I love that double.
Yeah.
Like, it made me wonder, like, petrified, obviously, because she's in stone and she's there forever. But also, is she afraid? Like, that's what I was thinking. Like, is she afraid of something? That was the first thought.
Afraid of what she's become?
Yeah, who she's become or what's happening or
maybe.
What is it?
Do you think she's afraid of what she's become?
I
kind of feel like
that. I don't know enough. I feel like
she's leaned in hard.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I saw then she said she would have needed, like, her tasers in the statue, and she would not have needed it. If she had been better, and she's digging up bones, and like things are going to get worse. And I was like, is she regretful?
That's where I got the fear from. Because when you first said that question, I thought, yeah, she's afraid. But I think it's from, there's a part where
she's afraid of, like, the powerful being afraid of her and therefore threatened.
Right.
And so, but I don't think she's, like, regretful.
No, I think just the fear of, because at one point she kind of stacks her chips. Like, she's like, and I got this on this guy, and I got that on
right.
this guy.
Yep.
And I totally
buy it. Like, that sounds like the Lydia we know and love.
And later on, when she talks about when she was a judge in the takeover, and where she says, like, and even in that position, I did what I had to do to get by, like, and what was asked of me. And there's a great line, and I underline it, and I'll have to find it, but, you know, she said, I gained through the decades of hardscrabble work and arduous professional climbing, and I'd been performing that function as equitably as I could. I'd acted for the betterment of the world as I saw the betterment within the practical limits of my profession.
Yeah. Perfect.
And I think she does the same in her role as Lydia.
Oh, yeah. She does what she can within
100%.
Those bounds.
And she lives in that life virtuously, just like she did when she was a judge. She's going to do the same. It's like all or nothing with her.
That's such a great summation of her.
And the first chapter kind of ends with 36. Her, like, talking about how she's hiding these pages and she doesn't want anyone to find them. So it's almost, you know, the same thing you were saying with the judge. Like, she wants to be held up to the standard, but she's so scared of someone seeing her differently.
Even if what she's doing is absolutely terrible.
Right.
but it makes sense in a weird way, not in a way that I would ever do it, but, like, you've met people like that.
Right.
That you know would be the Aunt Lydia of the, if a takeover was, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, you've met people like that.
That makes it weird. Like now, now next time I meet somebody that I think of like that, I'm going to be like, ooh, are you going to aid the takeover of society?
But she does point out some of the ridiculousness of it as well. So you know that she's not bought in whole hog. She's not like, oh, this is the way of life and we should all be like this. At one point on page 64, she says, and Judd's ridiculous certificate of whiteness scheme that had collapsed in the welter of forgeries and bribery. She's talking about it being ridiculous in several ways, I think. I don't think she's just saying it was ridiculous because it failed and that's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. But also, it's ridiculous.
Yes.
Like, I think part of her thinks that Gilead is ridiculous and absurd, mm-hmm. but because she's not a person that does something halfway. She's a person that does something 100%, which is, I think, what Angie was alluding to. And so she's going to do it up and she's going to do it right. But yeah. she's not stupid. She's a judge. She knows some of this stuff is absolutely so crazy.
Yeah, she knows how to play the game.
Yeah, yes. I feel like almost everything that Lydia says, particularly in this book, not necessarily... I haven't reread The Handmaid's Tale recently enough to be able to say this isn't a tribute of her character through both books. But particularly in this book so far, I feel like nearly everything she says has a double meaning.
Yeah.
Where you can take it, attribute it to her personally and to the world that she's actually speaking about in her dialogue. And it's in varying ways.
Well, that makes me, like, I feel the same way because like, who is she talking to? Like, she keeps saying, dear reader, but, like, who does she think is going to read this? And, like if she doesn't know who's going to read it, is she writing this because she's figuring something out about herself? Or is she writing it because she's trying to, like, if somebody finds this, like, I want to be able to slither, you know, like, slither out of it. You know, like, even the, like, per ardua estis motto, she was, like, proud of how slippery it was. Like, is that part of her personality, is that you have that double edge because you're just constantly slippery? Or is she, I don't know, I just kept wondering, like, who is she writing to? Who's the reader?
Yeah. I definitely have been reading assuming that she is writing mainly to, like, cleanse and justify herself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If only to herself.
Okay.
I don't know that I necessarily believe she's, like, writing to, like, an imagined, you know, person in a certain situation in the future. I feel like half of this is definitely, like, to herself. She's writing to herself to, like, lay it out there and explain what her conscious or unconscious thought process has been throughout all of these insane events that have happened. You know, the takeover, which was clearly very hectic for her in the beginning. I'm excited to hear more about that transition to... How did she not just get to be an aunt, but get to be, like, powerful?
Why was she elevated?
Yes, I'm super interested in that. Well, because I would think that, like, a woman in a position like a judge would be, like, the first to get murdered in this situation because they have the wherewithal. Yes. Oh,
yeah.
Yes, well, they're used to holding high position in society, and the people taking over believe that society to be totally invalid. I would think that those are the people, especially women in those positions, that you would want to get rid of first. Right. So I'm really interested in, like, why did that not happen to her?
She talks a lot about, like, how there's no practical use of regretting anything, that the decisions that she's made
thus far. It's totally true.
Mm-hmm. And how she's passed lots of, like, corpses along the way, but we'll notice that hers is not one of them. And so there's,
She even says stepped over them.
Yeah.
Which I thought was an interesting choice of words.
Just so curious. I'm with you, Tiana. I need to know how and why she was elevated to this.
Yeah, even if she's just writing for herself, I'm so glad.
Right. But it's interesting. Like,
I don't know if she's writing for herself, though.
I don't think so.
No, I'm not there.
Well, and I think, I just feel like she keeps saying, like, little things that keep bugging me. Like on page 32, she says, I've become swollen with power, true, but also nebulous with it, formless, shape-shifting. I'm everywhere and nowhere, even in the minds of the commanders, I cast an unsettling shadow. How can I regain myself? How to shrink back to my normal size, the size of an ordinary woman? Like, is she trying to, or am I reading it differently?
Yeah, do you think she is saying that in, like, I wish I could kind of way? Like, how would I go about it? Or is it just like, but how could
I?
But
this is the way things are. But perhaps it is too late for that. So it makes me think that she's kind of like, I have stepped over the corpses and I have pushed away what I've done for so long.
Yeah.
Can't unknow that.
How do I unsee, unknow, and undo that? I can't, but then, I did that. You know,
further on, she says, you know, there are two directions. You go up or you go down, and we all know she's not going down.
She's not going down.
Well, maybe yet. I don't know. So,
not so far.
Well, for her, too, down would really be... like death, you know,
she's
not going to be a handmaid.
Right,
I mean,
there's no
either,
easy out.
Right.
There's no down for her.
Yeah, that's a good point.
To the this or nothing. So.
And then to follow it with the image of, like, and we have Easter eggs.
Yeah.
I was like, huh?
It's a nice treat I provide. I was like, whoa.
This is so bizarre.
This is so strange.
But like, that's, I kind of feel like that's how the show is. They'll show, like, a really crazy, like, gripping scene, and then it'll be like, okay, now there's a Martha in a kitchen with a towel or something. And you're like, yeah, oh, okay. That's true. So we leave her. Where do we leave her? Like, she's in the stadium?
Yeah, so that's where we leave her. And I immediately went to what I can't remember for the life of me if it was described in the books, the stadium used for things like reapings and, you know, mass murders or things like that. I can't remember if that was also in the book or if I'm only remembering from the show.
Oh, mm-hmm. I know.
But that's exactly where my mind went as soon as she mentioned stadium. And I was like, does she like narrowly escape like some sort of mass execution? And it just made me want to read ahead even more. But I can't do that because then I'll accidentally talk about things we're not supposed to be talking about. Any emergency last minute thoughts on Lydia? So Agnes. I want to stay in Gilead.
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, not for real life, but
if I'm being like, yes, definitely not for real life. I don't think anybody would ever listen to me or know me and think that that would be appropriate or good for me at all. Murdered immediately.
So okay, there's a little bit of writing in Agnes's section where I'm like, tell us, Sarah. Okay. So on page 15, it said, what's that lazy? It's very in keeping with what's happening. It's not like it's in left field, but Agnes talks about how, like, oh, she talks about how, like, she's detached from her father because he kind of just is in his room or his office.
Because he's kind of a dick.
The important thing, you had to stay away from the important things that men did, too important for females to meddle with because they had smaller brains that were incapable. And it just made me think of that Anchorman scene where it was like, the brains are smaller, it's science.
Oh, God.
And I was like, okay. And I'm sure that many people for many years, in order to oppress women, have been saying that our brains are physically smaller. But I just couldn't help but think about the ridiculousness of that in Anchorman.
There are still places in the world today that practice,
I'm sure they
like,
do.
Skull measurement as a reason to keep down some people, so like it's right on track with that.
That's
which it's kind of shocking to think that like today with science as far as it has gone, some people still use that justification. But yeah, I guess like willingness to deny fact is like runs deep in some folks.
Mm-hmm. That's what Margaret Atwood was saying in the interview, if you remember. She was saying nothing that happens in her books has not been without precedent. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Like, there's and historical.
I think like most people know that it is like a historical thing, especially during the days of the slave trade across multiple continents. Yeah. Like that was a very popular justification.
Right.
And I think that's fairly well known, despite our not talking about that kind of stuff in history class. But I don't think people generally realize that that still happens today.
I know. And I learned about that in graduate school. So it's not like my only experience with smaller brain comments was from Anchorman. So know that I did learn that, but not until graduate school. So it wasn't a thing that I got ever in high school or undergrad. So none of that stuff did I even, and that's only because I took social justice. It wasn't even a part of anything else.
Yeah, that's something our country just utterly fails at teaching about.
Oh, and I should mention that I had an exceedingly competent teacher in that class, too. She was incredible. So that's important to note. But it just felt like the brains are smaller.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I felt
really
it
saddened
ridiculous.
By it because I felt like it – because I hear what you're saying. Like, I do hear what you're saying. But I also felt saddened by it because I was listening to it. And I was like – maybe because of the person who's doing the speaking read it. And it was so – like she believed it, like, and
yeah,
that's what,
like it was a true fact.
Yeah, and that's what I was concerned about. I was like, oh my God, she's so brainwashed, you know. Yeah. And that's what I went to rather than that's ridiculous.
How goofy,
you know, who thinks that? But and how could she possibly be taught that? But it made me really sad because she said it, but then she followed it up thankfully with, I guess thankfully because it was like a weird dark humor that. It would be like trying to teach a cat to crochet, said Aunt Este, who taught us crafts. And that would make us laugh, because how ridiculous. Cats didn't even have fingers. Like, I was kind of like, ha! Oh, wait.
Yes, totally. Totally. Yeah. I completely had that same reaction to a lot of comments that Agnes made.
Yes.
Just, like, offhandedly. Like, oh, that's so
terrible.
True and sad.
Yeah.
Like, of course, that's what you think.
Well, and for her, it actually does come, well, not come true. The second page where it talks about like the needs of men and how you must always be conscious of the needs of men. And if your skirt flies up in the wind, like
and how,
can't possibly.
Why you can't swing on a swing.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Yeah, the swing
would be
with the,
so sad. I know.
That brought back super sad.
The way the boys get to swing, that's the answer?
Yeah.
Come on.
And she's desperate for just sensing that freedom, what it must be like to be in that air. Mm-hmm. And
so sad.
And the sad part is that it does come true for her. It's not just like, oh, this is something she hears about in school and it inhibits her behavior. It's like, oh, and then she goes to the dentist and that happens.
Yeah.
So we definitely can't skip over the dentist. Mm-mm. So the dentist that assaults her in the chair before she leaves, that's, you know, I mean, of course, really hits home because things like that happen every day today to girls and women all over. And it's still something that, like, is an understood thing that may be communicated kind of in an under the table way to warn girls and women about people like that. But often they feel like there's nothing they can do. So they just have to let it happen and try to avoid it for themselves and the people that they love. Mm-hmm. Like that felt so pertinent and real.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And especially the response of where she thought maybe one of the Marthas knew what was going to happen. Mm-hmm.
And like maybe tried to warn her, but maybe not and
really,
definitely not effectively.
And even so, just the silence of that and speak to the Me Too movement here, right? About how dangerous it is that, like what you were saying, Tiana, like if this was today, would we have a much different reaction? No, wake up, you know, ladies, obviously, if this is a version of Gilead.
Definitely. Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if there will be a lot more moments like that in this book where like something shocking happens. And then if you think about it for a moment, you realize that's exactly what happens now.
Oh, yeah. And then she was thinking about Becca, right? The daughter of the dentist. Mm-hmm. And
what would it do to her? Yeah.
Versus even thinking about like, the humiliation she just endured. And I couldn't do that to Becca, but.
Yes. Thinking about everybody else.
Everybody else's perspective. Mm-hmm. And just thinking about, you know, the work we do and what we know about people who are victims of abuse, that is a go-to.
Oh, right. And especially that and her saying, you know, going back to what the aunts always teach them of her saying, well, you know, I was always told that men did have these desires and these thoughts.
And there's nothing you can do about
it. And that's just life. Right.
Ready, girls.
That was like, so realistic, too. Yeah.
Right.
And then going back to the story of the concubine and how they were told about, like, how she was very...
Oh God.
Yeah. How Becca responded to that. Then you were like, oh, no. Like, this is not limited. To me, I felt like that was not limited to the girls at the dentist, that he's assaulting his daughter. Because she's the only one who speaks up and says, what will happen to girls? You know, she says, and then Aunt Fidala's response is, well, she deserved it, don't you think? And Becca is, like, beside herself. And all the girls are kind of going, like,
what's wrong
deal?
With her?
Yeah, because she's probably experienced some kind of defiling, you know, if so to speak. Kill her? Her voice is, that's on page 78, like, her voice is barely above a whisper. Or she's crying. It says, when many men doing lustful things all at once will kill a girl. And this is God's way of telling us that we should be content with our lot and not rebel against it. You know, then she's like, control yourself, Becca. And I was just like, ugh, control yourself. You know, just such like victim blaming.
Well, nice girls did not notice the minor antics of men. Mm-hmm, they simply look the other way.
Yeah.
When I read that on 97, I was like,
did not notice. That's not even acknowledging that it has to be a willful looking away.
Yeah.
You just don't even notice.
That was a hard section for me. I was just, ooh. Yeah.
And then how the end of the story kind of ends with, well, she was noble and she made a sacrifice. And women have to make sacrifices
all
sometimes
the time.
For men.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She points out that, like, it wasn't a choice. Like, because they say it like she made this sacrifice as though it was a choice. Like, but
that was
nothing
very unsettling.
Was a choice. Somebody came in and just cut her open and she bled to death.
Right. Can I ask somebody who has read a whole lot more Bible than me to tell me, like, how accurate is that recounting of what is actually in there?
In Atwood's interview, she said that, like, they read the story. And it was accurate to the, to like, the what Agnes adds later about how they cut her up and everything.
Gotcha.
And actually
that makes sense.
Yeah. So that
I wonder a lot about those things in relation to this storyline, mm-hmm. whether it's in show or book or whatever, because I don't have the knowledge to know, like, is what they're saying right now the way that Gilead twisted it, or is that the way it's actually written and they're just interpreting it in this particular way?
Yeah. So this scene is biblical?
Yes.
I'm like so ignorant. I don't even know.
Yes, Judges. That's what it was. So I think the interviewer asked about it particularly, and she was like, she said, will you tell us that story? And she was like, yep, that's what happened.
I have found that she stays pretty true to her references to the Bible.
But I know there's some weird stuff in the Old Testament that isn't necessarily accepted by modern day.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know where those Christians are.
So sometimes
or anything like that.
Confused about that.
I have a really important thing to pause for. Can somebody hand me the bottle of wine so I can refill, please?
Sure. I thought it was interesting that she said that she was dangerous. She's considered dangerous now that she's hit puberty. And I made so many connections to this section with Agnes, just like I didn't grow up in the church, but then I got into church like when I was in late high school and into college, and I got into a more conservative, very evangelical church, and these were a lot of things I heard.
Like, oh, really?
You need to watch your legs, your body, your words, because men cannot control themselves, and you need to be, you are the one who needs to be responsible. And even up to the point when I got
married, responsibility shifting.
Like, if your husband wants to have sex, then you should do it, and because you are the wife. Otherwise, he might stray, and that will be your fault. And, like, those are things that I was told. And I remember being like, no. Like, you know, I don't think so. And, like, asking questions and, like, well, you'll just have to understand once you get married. And I'm like, I don't think that I will. But, but I really, like, I thought about that and how dangerous. Like, you know, I didn't grow up that way and I didn't have negative experiences, you know, like Agnes has had. But at the same time, I thought, gosh, that would be really terrible if every single adult around you was like, turn a blind eye. And
I can't imagine.
Don't say anything.
I went to a relatively liberal for Baptist church when I was little. I went with my grandparents because it was super fun. There was singing and crafts.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Why not go?
Yeah.
But like left when it got uncomfortable, where like some things that I was hearing were kind of conflicting with my morals. And then when I asked questions, I was told like that was not a very good question to ask. I was like, oh, this is not my place anymore.
Right. And that's not how all Christian churches are.
Yeah.
But it's just some...
Yeah, and that church, like, that's the only place of worship that has ever felt like a church family or home to me. Mm-hmm. And I really miss it in some ways. But, like, yeah, like, once I reached a certain age, the conflicting parts just overpowered the wanting to hang out with my friends from church and sing and do crafts.
Absolutely.
I was like, I can do secular singing.
There's community there.
That's okay, too.
This is not super related to the book. Welcome to my commentary and podcast. But Dax Shepard has a podcast called Armchair Expert, and he and Jim Gaffigan, who is his most recent interview, talk a lot.
That sounds hilarious already.
Yeah, it does.
They talk a lot. Well, it actually gets kind of deep, but they talk a lot about religion and how Jim and his wife view religion and how Dax views religion and the ways they agree and the ways they disagree, and it's super thoughtful and it's really interesting. And I just thought I'd mention that for anybody who listens to that podcast, definitely listen to the Jim Gaffigan interview. And it's a long one because these are long form interviews, right? So it's an hour and a half, but it's really good. And he and Jim get into some really thoughtful conversation because, as you know, Jim Gaffigan's wife is very ultra Catholic. She writes and directs a lot of his stuff, so she has a large hand in his career and all that.
Interesting.
Anyway.
But that's why his comedy is family-friendly comedy, right?
Okay, I thought probably. So. But yeah, so they have a really thoughtful conversation about religion. And
it's good to know. I would totally give that a listen.
Yeah, FY. It's a long listen, but it's a good one. A lot of his interviews are really good.
Did you say FY as in FYI, but shortened?
Remember,
FYI is too short
remember
for you. It's too
me,
long.
I straddle.
Oh my goodness.
Millennials.
My word.
And
so
Gen
do
X,
I. That's no excuse.
You do? Straddle is a non-sexual term in this context because not always
there is no context
straddle.
Where straddle is non-sexual.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I agree. You unless you're on a what? You laugh mount every the time. Horse, that doesn't work either.
Oh, my God. So you what? The horse?
Mount the horse.
Mount. I thought you said notch the horse. No. I was like, huh? What's that?
Like a belt.
Yeah. There are so many overtly sexual words.
So.
This is totally on brand for our podcast, FYI. Not
why?
Why?
I was gonna say, I'm just trying to stay on brand, guys.
Why?
Millennials.
Not millennials.
No.
Millennials.
No. We work with millennials. with a lot of millennials that I've never heard.
Whitney is our representative,
like
true millennial,
deep in the millennial
years.
And you
say fly?
I do not say fly. I do not.
I'm like, Whitney, no, I've never heard you say this.
Whitney said,
I think that she said fly.
I've only recently accepted that I'm a millennial, though. That's me.
You are? You do not strike me as a millennial.
I am. I'm an older millennial. I'm an older millennial.
Oh yeah,
she's an older millennial. I was born in 86. What's the span for millennial?
I was born in
82.
And I was born in 83.
And I was born in 82.
Oh, I'm in the middle of it.
Yay!
There's the true millennial.
I want to make fly happen.
Do you say fly?
No, just no. But now, happen at the office.
Are the only
old ones
in this world?
No, I only adopt the things that I like about millennials. Like,
yeah, you got to cherry pick it.
Like what? What are the things?
Like things that I like about millennials?
Yeah, okay.
The avocado people. Fitness influencers? Please. That's all I do. Alternative milks?
Alternative milk.
Yes, the hipstery things are fun.
Nut butters.
All the good things. Nut butters were a thing before millennials. I'm sorry.
I like the millennial push of like, I can be my own boss and I can work from home and also I can wear jeans to work and I can still be super productive and be creative and like work outside the normal like, I don't know, office and stuff.
I feel
like
you just like needed to go into a different creative field because they've always been like that. Like designers have always had that.
Well,
that's the
maybe
way
I should have been a designer. Because I don't know if
you
I could
still do it.
It's pretty
you
fun.
You can still do it.
But think of the children.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
So moving on to our last character, which is named Daisy. And is clearly, can we just say.
Is anybody else really annoyed that her Canada name is Daisy?
Daisy.
Yes. What the?
I am so sorry, listener. If your name is Daisy, I really apologize. It might suit you so well.
I don't like Daisy.
But I feel like for this character, knowing who her parents are. And just like the circumstances of the world and where she is, for them to assign her the name Daisy seems very not appropriate for what led up to her being in Canada.
I agree.
Being
maybe
able to live a free life.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, let's clear the air.
I
feel like
weird.
It's well understood that this is Baby Nicole, which even if you haven't read past chapter 6.
Just a show thing, not a book thing. Like,
true.
This is where she starts to adopt the shared plot
line. Oh, yeah. I meant to mention that earlier. I feel like there's a lot of cherry picking between what do we continue from the book versus what do we continue from the show.
I don't like Daisy because they call the people, the girls of Gilead, precious flowers. Or like they constantly refer to them as flowers.
Right.
And I don't know if that's like a nod, like, oh, she's from Gilead, everybody. She's a Daisy.
I don't think they would do that.
I don't think so either. But at the same time, I don't know. Daisy seems so...
Too close for comfort.
It like seems, a pansy. Like
it seems too frivolous a name.
Yes.
To have somebody who is like such a key person in this very serious situation.
I agree.
Again, good apologies point. If your name is Daisy. I'm sure it's lovely for you. It suits in a lot of situations.
Yeah,
just not
here.
This one.
Yes,
not
just this not one. This one.
When you get to choose it.
All the Daisies on Twitter, please fire off on us
also,
immediately
and
let us
Daisy,
know how you feel.
If your name is Daisy and you're a listener, please comment and let us know how you feel about having the same name as this character. I would be really interested to hear that.
Maybe post a picture of your favorite
open.
Daisy.
I feel like Daisy's narration was just very average.
Yeah.
Average all around. I liked hearing about like the weird observations she had about people that would visit the shop and her life and like why she didn't understand some things that her parents did or didn't want her to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, great. I'm glad you have opinions on those things. Every 15-year-old girl has these opinions.
Right. And I was going to say, I feel like she's a teenager.
Yeah.
And we have to take it for what it is.
Would this maybe be different if it were a male reading it and then you wouldn't have had all of those 15-year-old girl thoughts maybe? Mm. I don't know what that would be like, but like I really felt like this was a retread of talking to when I was 15, like talking to every other 15-year-old girl I knew.
I think it was intentional though for her to remember herself as very ordinary and plain almost, because she even makes the comment when her parents are in the car bomb accident, like why would they kill such ordinary people? You know, like I think she's just remembering this past life is very plain Jane.
Yeah, I did really enjoy the fact, because I thought it was very interesting, that she is aware of the rebellion and the push to try to rescue people that has dwindled over the years from Gilead. But she has like a conflicted notion of like, why are we bothering with this other country? Because as far as she knows, you know, she's never known Gilead to not be Gilead. You know, she doesn't remember the United States of America. She doesn't have a world sense of this thing that is gone and how huge of a change that must have been for not just America, but for the world, especially countries like Canada who are very close relations and are physically near. And so this is a very dangerous situation for them. But I thought it was really interesting that she has such average thoughts about that and about the rebellion generally, but doesn't realize that her parents are key members in the rebellion, even though she references them like randomly having like lots of people over for meetings at the dinner table.
But I also want to reference like or recognize that apparently she's telling this after the fact. You know, like she says, of course you'll want to hear about the past. So mm-hmm. she's talking to somebody now, whatever now is, yeah. about things. And so some of that is coming back. Whatever she's saying now is through the filter of the more recent past or whatever. So, I mean, even like she says on 47, like, despite all that she did for me, Melanie had a distant smell. She smelled like floral guest soap in a strange house. What I mean is she didn't smell like my mother. Like, that's not necessarily something that you would say mm-hmm. early on until, or like, or later on, even the next page on 48, only an idiot would have believed this. And so I did. Like, things, there's some reflective nature about it. Yeah. And so it's weird because we're getting like this, yes, teenage mind, and this is what I saw, but you're also only getting the points that she thinks are relevant to whoever she's talking to in this transcript, like transcript of witness testimony. Like, yeah. what is she witnessing?
I don't. And when she first opens that chapter too, she says, you know, she was almost like a fraud, like a bad magician, like a fake antique. So it's almost like in her mind, she separates her life before the explosion and before she found out the truth and after. So maybe her recalling the before is just very
vanilla.
But I feel like we could have gotten all that information in a much tighter package.
Yeah.
And still been just as well off for understanding the story.
It did feel drawn out.
Very true. I don't understand why the testimony, like why a testimony would be told this way. This is something that bothers me about the style of the book. Is like, I do love a young adult book that has, I guess not really young adult, but I like multiple narrators, but because of the testimony witness thing, like, you wouldn't necessarily, if you were recording something for some kind of testimony, would you be saying things like having all this dialogue, like, on even 41, can I play with it, I asked Neil, play with what? That toy in the safe. Not today, mm-hmm. he said, smiling. Like, you wouldn't, that doesn't fit the style to me.
That moment.
You would just say, like, I asked him if I could play with it, and he said, play with what? And I said, that toy, and he said, not today. And he said it with this weird smile. Like, you would have had some mm-hmm. conversational tone, and mm-hmm. that's something that has bothered me about this.
Yeah.
Writing.
Do you think, like, what are you imagining? Just for anybody who's listening who hasn't read the book yet, I don't know why you would be listening, but just in case you are, the way that the chapters in which we're listening to we're reading Daisy's perspective is they're introduced as testimony of witness, whatever.
Yeah.
So it's a very different intro to a chapter than you would get with Lydia or with even Agnes, where you're just not given context. Mm-hmm. With Lydia, it's quite obvious. With Agnes, like, it's pretty easy to figure out early on, mm-hmm. before she even mentions her name. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's fairly clear, like, what her situation and station in life is. Mm-hmm. But it's very weird thing to do without much explanation for Daisy, I think. Like, I feel like I need to know, like, is this being called a testimony because that's how they're thinking of it after it's been found?
Maybe.
Like, much like the end of the Handmaid's Tale original novel? Or is this a testimony because when she was giving it or recording it or whatever the case may be or writing it down, that was the intent at the time? I don't understand that.
I think the transcript is the weird part to mm-hmm. me. Because the transcript to me says, this is what they said.
Said in some
and now I've written
yeah,
it down.
Yeah, you're right.
So and would Lydia's you say that? Very, like, Lydia says she's writing and she doesn't know if anyone's right. going to read it.
And I didn't know what a holograph was. Did you guys know? I looked it up.
Yeah. I read a lot of sci-fi. I was totally up on what a holograph was.
I did not know. Well, not for readers who are like me. A holograph
like
is a handwritten document.
Image of a person and it feels like they're in front
of you. That's exactly what I was thinking, though. It's a handwritten document that's the work of only the person who signs it. I didn't know that. Anyway, that's back to Lydia. But
it's like a living will, but not a will.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I was like, that's what I kept thinking. I was like, a hologram? No, it's not a hologram.
Yeah. Just so you know, 0 for 3 on anyone that pronounces the word, pronounces FYI, fly.
Oh, I'm sure you did. Okay.
So far,
all right.
No one.
Well, no Sarah one. Counts as one.
Just Sarah.
So it's not a millennial thing.
One Sarah with an assist
thing.
From Leah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Please don't
I'm
make it
start
a,
saying.
Please wait, don't make it a thing.
Wait, one person.
Ooh.
Oh.
One.
What do you think about Daisy?
I liked Daisy, not as much as I liked the other two. She's definitely my third favorite out of three. But like I said, she was very plain until we got to the bombing part, and then I think it's getting interesting. Like, I think we just got a little bit of her, and we're going to get more of the meat later, which I'm excited about. Did not know she was baby Nicole until the bomb happened. I think that's when it clicked in my mind.
Did you suspect earlier?
Yes, especially, okay. I think that I suspected more when the parents were freaking out over her going to the protest.
Right.
And very aware that she might be seen on TV.
And, like, lots of unknowns about who she was when she was younger.
Yes.
Like, just too many forced, like, lies about why there are no pictures or no memories.
Yeah.
Or,
them not taking pictures, I feel like, was a huge red
flag.
That
was when I got... And I'm not sure if she was trying to hide it from us, but I could see what you're saying by lazy, and I don't think you mean she's a lazy writer.
No.
I think we all know what you mean. But to me, that was like, oh, I'll throw this in here. They'll put it together early. I mean, that was a dead giveaway, I thought.
I was just thinking, I just turned to the page where we find that the Pearl Girl has died.
Like, oh, yeah.
What did you think about that? I didn't understand that part very well.
I really... I feel like every time they're mentioned, I just want to understand a little bit more about, like, how does one become a Pearl Girl and wind up doing that? Like, what? I thought
Aunt Lydia talked about that. Like, they decided to put the... Oh, like, how... I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, like who gets chosen for that?
Book.
And, like, how do they wind up on that, like, assignment? Like, that, one, seems like a lot of responsibility for Gilead to entrust a woman with.
Right. That,
Two...
Strange.
It seems like a really risky move. Like, yes, that is totally the kind of, like, I hate to use the word missionary for this, but it really fits because it's Gilead. That is totally the kind of missionary work that has been used in covert operations around the world in historical
context.
Yes.
Sure. And I think they women purposely. Gentle, people approachable. People will not be as freaked out by little girls stressed
out. But don't you think Gilead would have also been, as the machine of Gilead does, assuming that the girls will be, you know, poisoned,
not
basically?
True.
Yeah. I don't.
No?
They reflect on people who are devout in their faith in ways that can be, you know, catastrophic, let's say, right? When they're imposing their faith on people that don't necessarily ask for it. I feel like sometimes we've all had conversations with people where you think, wow, how do they really think that? How is that ingrained in them? I hate to also use the word brainwashing because I don't believe every faith practices the art of brainwashing.
Right. The vast majority are not.
Yeah, but I do believe when you have an ulterior motive to something, then...
When your mission is to oppress, I feel like at any point when your mission is to oppress a group of people... That can legitimately be called brainwashing. Mm-hmm. And that is clearly what's happening here.
Right.
I think you could only use girls who had grown up in Gilead. Like, you can't take, like, a person who's been stolen, like Aunt Lydia, and be like, hey, now go be a missionary for us. Like, I don't think that would work. But when we read Agnes's story, we really see the things that she believes and hears and cannot think differently.
I even feel that if Agnes was put into a different situation in Canada and didn't have... you know, wasn't surrounded by Gilead, didn't have her Gilead parents telling her what to do, that she would change and be highly influenced by the rest of the world. Man, that must be like a special kind of person they choose to do that. I don't know. I just have so many questions
about
this.
That would take a lot of time to be able to really get somebody to
like
see the ways of a world that's vastly different.
Do they raise them specifically for this job?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and then maybe to your question, Whitney, about what happened there or why... Maybe that's something that became too much for the Pearl Girl to handle, and that's the reaction that where she thought that's her only way out of this is, I'd rather kill myself.
Right.
Well, we don't really
here
know.
Where it's available in Canada,
right? Versus going back to that shithole, right, of Gilead. So I mean,
I just thought it was strange. Pearl Girls are on like espionage missions.
Oh, I would.
Or
for,
just
I have
two.
Assumed that totally.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Espionage for
so.
Gilead. Yeah, maybe.
And the goal is to help the fallen see that Gilead is a place where they would want to be.
I feel like back to what Andrew was saying earlier, like, I guess, although I hear what you're saying about why trust girls, like, when you send a girl, when Canada knows that Gilead oppresses girls so much, to send somebody who's like, no, it's beautiful, it's wonderful, then you cast that doubt. Like, you have to kind of believe
Is it really
this
bad?
This yeah. healthy looking kid in front of you who is telling you this pearl who is you kind of have to believe them.
You're right. That definitely would be the most convincing messenger.
Yeah, because if a man came, they'd be like, no.
Or even like a much older person.
Yeah.
Did everybody else, I can't remember if they said specifically, did everybody else assume that the Pearl Girls were relatively young?
Oh, I did because it was girl.
Yeah, I did too, but I didn't know if, I can't remember if that was actually mentioned.
You know, teens or like preteens. I was,
Oh, preteens.
Or like,
even.
I mean, that's I see them as 12, 13, 14. I don't see them as.
Really? That's prime baby making age.
And,
for Gilead.
Well, I guess I also thought that because of our timeline with Agnes knowing, well, and I guess I'm conflating it with the show. I don't know, because I'm thinking, well, how old is Agnes? Well, and then there's Pearl Girls going out and Aunt Lydia is sort of like the OG, right?
I mean, that still tracks with the book. Like, we don't know. I don't know what happened after she got levitated in the book.
Yeah, we don't know.
I don't know. I have a random question that is not directly related to Agnes, but makes me think of Agnes a lot. When you saw that one of the chapters was named Van, what did you think? Because I immediately went to when...
the Handmaid's Tale Van. I mean, the Handmaid's Van with the red curtains.
Not the Handmaid's Van, but like that always is a strong visual for me. But like the van that like the various vans, I should say, where people are put into a van and they don't know where they're going and they're being taken to a place where something terrible is going to happen. Yeah. And like the van at the end of the book of the Handmaid's Tale book where she doesn't know where she's going. That's like immediately what my mind went to. And I was really like waiting for that, but that wasn't what it was in reference to.
It's like in the '60s.
I did not even look at the right.
I also thought about the birthmobile from the show.
Oh, yeah. Why does it look like a womb inside? That really weirds me out.
It's kind of like Praveganza.
Oh my god! I love those names so much. It was so 70s, 80s. Mm-hmm. Such a 70s, 80s naming of things, and I'm so glad that she stuck with it for this book.
Well, I don't know.
Well, the birthing, the whole scene with the like where they're mimicking.
Yes.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
I could not dream of something so bizarre in my mind. Like I couldn't even conceive of that. No pun intended. Like I could not even think of a thing that was messed up. If you said, Sarah, think of a thing that's super messed up about a birth ceremony in dystopian future Gilead, I couldn't think of that. Like that was just
true. And
crazy.
The birthing seat, the two-seater birthing seat.
Whoa. Oh my god!
You know,
worst imagining of giving birth ever, which really says a lot.
I could not
even. Ladies go through some terrible imaginings of giving birth.
Brilliant.
Can't even imagine, like when I was giving birth, like the whole time in labor, I was like, don't touch me. Like I wanted my husband right next to me, but I was like, if he touched me, I was like, like leave me alone. So like having
stand
to
here.
Sit.
Don't move.
Yeah,
don't touch me.
Exactly.
Don't do this.
That's
but
what
stand
I said.
Right here.
Did you do that too? That's exactly what I did.
I think that's what maybe what some of us can
relate
to.
That's exactly what I wanted. But like to have somebody on a seat with you who is like not even, can you imagine?
Who's ready to take
actively
your baby.
Yeah.
And
who's like,
you are done
mimicking like,
you.
Oh yeah, these labor pains.
Oh,
and you're
I feel
like,
this
shut
too.
Up. Yes.
Oh,
no, you don't.
God. Yeah.
So many.
Sorry. We're
that
totally
is like the worst torture.
To the show, but yeah, that is something that really
but this happens
with
in
me
here too. She's got
given birth.
The honored seat or something. I forgot what it is, but
yeah.
And the fact that she has to be cut open for the baby that, I thought, where is it?
Yeah, so that's something we didn't touch on when we talked about Agnes, is that her family's handmaid was basically sacrificed to give the baby a life.
Mm-hmm. Against her will,
which is, you know, not something that wouldn't happen today. That is a choice that some families have to make, God bless them. Mm-hmm. But it's talked about in such a way that you get the impression that they didn't make an attempt to save the handmaid, really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Well, she was not the priority.
Well, she wasn't the priority, but I was a little surprised to, like, get the feeling from the talking around it that they didn't attempt to save the handmaid because fertile women are fairly rare in Gilead.
I thought it was interesting that Agnes realized that it was kind of...
Messed up.
Yeah. She wasn't just like, and that's what you do, and if you're the baby, and
that's
then
true.
You die. Like, it wasn't, it was not brainwashing
well,
at
Well, it was Agnes much later.
I was wondering if it was, I couldn't remember
that.
If it was
because
reflective
she did,
older Agnes.
That was not far away from when she was commenting on, like, how weird it is that they used to sing about, like, only one for death, but, like, more for straying or something like that.
And that was after she developed the fascination with the handmaid, too. So I think she felt extra attached.
I think she felt isolated like the handmaid did. And she, like at times she says, like, I saw her, like, something about her face being blank, and she's like, I know how to make your face go blank. And so I know there's more behind her. Like, I think she felt like she was the only one who really saw who the handmaid was.
Yeah.
I think it's an attempt to...
Even though it didn't seem like she had a lot of interaction with her.
Right.
I think it was an attempt to understand something about herself.
Yes, right. You're right. So, yeah.
Her mom. Who my mother might be. Like, I need to understand this life. People keep saying these women are sluts. We know they're not sluts. She even knows they're not. Mm-hmm. Like, even the use of that word is, I think, makes Agnes uneasy.
And there was even a time where I think she might have thought or hoped that the handmaid might be her mother. And she, I think after she said it, she was like, well, that's ridiculous. It's just me dreaming.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe in the back of her head, she kind of wished for that.
And she is recounting the story and saying, you'll want to know her name. It was Crystal. Like, the fact that she names her. And that makes me think of that Margaret Atwood interview, too, about the poem that she wrote that sort of preceded The Handmaid's Tale about, it was about names and how, like, a name is, without your name, I'm going to mess this up, but about how if you lose your name or if you don't have a name, then you are not, or, like, the name is the last thing that people can take of you. I think that's what it was. It was the name. And I think about the whole book and The Handmaid's Tale and everybody has to change names so frequently, and even, you know, you're of Kyle, you're of whoever, you know, and your name is, it's so important. And the fact that she says, you know, her name is Crystal, like, that is the real person. She's not of Kyle. She's Crystal. I think that's a nod to that poem that Margaret wrote, or Atwood wrote, rather.
And what do they say? Like, the name's the first gift someone's given you. And
I mean, that's what she says.
And the way she ends talking about Crystal, too, on 105, like, I did not cry. I'd already done my crying. Truth was that they'd cut Crystal open to get the baby out, and they'd kill her by doing that. It wasn't something she chose. She hadn't volunteered to die with noble, womanly honor or be a shining example, but nobody mentioned that. And so I think that just speaks to how astute Agnes is about her surroundings and how this is not sitting well with her.
Yeah. Right? And that was a lot of, you know, semi-direct referencing to the woman that she heard about in school who was, you know, ostensibly chose to die with honor and sacrifice herself, but clearly did not. You know, she was cut up into pieces, much like the handmaid.
And I think the development of her character is really referencing Offred, or June, if you will, and sort of her questioning of things and not, you know, being okay with status quo and, you know, being sullen at times for what's going on around her, obviously, but then also thinking, wait a minute, that's not okay. I will do something about it.
Yeah,
so I'm waiting for some, like, rebellion
from
Agnes that I think will hopefully give us a parallel to June and her character.
Maybe with less physical punishment.
Right.
Oh, please.
Yeah, that'll be good. I can't wait to get a glimpse of Serena Joy.
Yeah.
I don't know if she'll be in this at all.
I don't know. I don't know. We don't know what's going to happen.
Well, and I thought that was, when I listened to The Handmaid's Tale, the book, I hadn't really thought about that. But it Serena Joy in the original book was like an elderly woman who had a cane.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I had forgotten that. And then when I was thinking about the episode, I was like, oh, they really changed her.
At first it very much pissed me off.
Same, but then I grew to love it.
Yeah. I do love it now, but I didn't like it back then. Because I thought it was like, well, we can't have an older woman.
Yeah, I know. That's totally how I felt about it at first, but I think the dynamics are so much more interesting if Serena is of childbearing age.
Yes. Right, which
is so much more interesting.
That is what makes it better. And Yvonne Strahovski's essay is wonderful as Serena Joy. But at first I was like, of course they can.
And I also really appreciate Fred being gross because of his actions, not because he is an old man.
Right.
Well, and Fred is actually an attractive man in the world.
Debatable.
Well,
but sure.
No. In the way that I appreciate that some people are attractive people.
Right.
Not I'm attracted to him, but like I appreciate that
still
he is not unattractive.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Really? Yeah, Joseph Fiennes isn't just like not a bad looking dude.
I don't think he's a bad looking guy.
Right.
Either.
He's not my type.
But I saw a poster of him without seeing the show.
He's no Michael Fassbender.
No.
But he is
certainly
not gross.
Something about him
puts me
off. Anyway,
you know my celebrity crush is Michael Fassbender, right?
I did not know that. I have missed out on that conversation.
We'll
talk later.
So we covered that pretty thoroughly. Does anybody have any thoughts, hopes, dreams that you can express in 45 seconds or less for the next round of chapters we're going to read?
I'm looking forward to finding out more about the characters and where they're going to go.
I want them to intertwine more, too.
Yeah.
I want these stories to connect.
I think I speak for everyone when I say that I want to see where Lydia gets this step up, because she's in the stadium now and something's going to turn and we need to know why. Any details about the turnover I would love. Any kind of spunk in Agnes would be great. Like,
I think we're seeing that.
I think we're well on the way to that, I think.
Yeah. And then, I don't know what I hope for Daisy.
I just hope that Daisy gets more enlightened.
Right?
Yeah. Like, let's have Daisy learn some facts about the world.
I mean, you know, or not 15, but she's 15 in this situation, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want Daisy to learn a lot more facts about the world and have opinions about them and then do something.
Mm-hmm. I know, I don't think we're going to get that, though.
I hope we get it by the end of the book. We don't know how much time is going to pass in this book.
That's true, how much time will elapse. That's a good point.
Peanut Gallery, please keep your thoughts to yourself on that, because I know you read the whole book. Yeah, I really hope that Daisy learns some things and then does some things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I similar to Sarah, we're like really excited to see more of the process of how Lydia becomes Aunt Lydia.
Yeah.
Like, statue.
Could be Lydia. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, thanks, guys. Ladies,
thank you.
I'm so excited to have some new voices and some returning voices. Not that I don't love you, Sarah.
I was going to say, I'll be
you're still
here.
My favorite. Yeah, awesome. So let's talk next week. We will be covering, what will we be covering? I've lost track.
It's like a 2
or going
something.
To 208.
We're
going to
be covering through chapter 12. If you have not devoured the whole book already, read along with us, and please comment when we post this episode. I'm super interested to hear what other people are thinking, but please, please do not spoil the rest of the book for me.
Give us your feedback.
I may
on the
or may not block you from our page.
Yes, please.
Please do not spoil the rest of the book for me.
Tell us things you would like for us to do on the interwebs. Don't
yes.
be shy.
If you have questions, if you have comments, if you have things you want us to address next episode, super interested to hear. Are we misinterpreting any of you? Yes. Mm. No.
The
a little
reader
bit.
Owns
everywhere.
It. The reader owns it. That's
it does.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for having.
And I think we will all be here. Sadly, missing Leah.
Yes.
Next week.
I am out.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll have you. We'll have you here in spirit.
And I will read. I'll keep up with my reading.
Maybe we'll Skype you.
We'll pour one out for you.
I'll give you a reading quiz maybe. Next time.
Justin right. caught it.
That's it.
All right.
All right, there you have it, and there you are. Episode 1 of the Testaments Book Club for May Day in the books. Remember, we got 3 more of these coming. We appreciate everyone listening. Stay tuned and stay subscribed in October for Handmade Halloween. Tons of stuff. This is all about you month. Giving tons of prizes away, having tons of contests and everything. So great things are coming. It's going to be a lot of fun. We look forward to it. Have a great time, and thanks for listening. See you.